This is The Topic is Trek, episode 75 for Friday, September 18th, 2020. Coming up in this episode, Q winks in, Ben Stiller geeks out, and it looks like someone has been messing with the Warp 10 barrier again. All that and more right now on The Topic is Trek. Episode Plus. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, The Topic is Trek. Engage already. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Topic is Trek, where the topic is always Trek. That's why we named it The Topic is Trek. I'm not sure where I was going with that one. So let me get right to introducing my co-hosts. First of all, beaming in from parts unknown is Mr. Craig Stepp.
To the moon. Did I already use that one?
I think you did.
It doesn't matter because someone else has already. So
Shazbot.
Yep. No.
Stay away from the skiffy Tourette's, Craig.
And also beaming in to join us, the voice is already here. Must mean that he's in mid beaming. Is Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
Live long and perspire.
Yes.
Craig, were you just imitating the transporter?
Well, you gotta have that noise behind you, not hear all the way. You know. Well, back from Dragon Con, which means we went no place at all. Stayed right here at home. It was interesting to say the least.
Spared the con crud.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Which is a good thing, I guess, but hopefully next year in Atlanta with that. If you want to catch our live show from Dragon Con, well, you can't catch it live now because it's over, but
recorded.
You can catch it recorded in front of a live monitor. You can either go to the Technorama website or you can go to Comedy Forecast, and we have the entire show there for your viewing and listening pleasure.
It's not live. It's recorded. We're making it sound less and less appealing.
It's Memorex. It's not live. It's Memorex.
It was so great that they're putting it in the National Library.
They are, along National with something Archive. Else we'll Craig, talk about. No, we'll talk about later.
It's going on archive.org maybe someday.
Oh, well, that's a little
not the
different.
National Archives. I'm sorry.
Little different. All right, really but let's, we've got a lot to cover in this episode. So we're going to, if it's okay with you, Charlie, we're going to open up subspace chatter.
You don't need all that subspace chatter.
Charlie, what am I going to do with you? You're incorrigible.
Talk about
predictable.
I'm not going to
encourage you.
One day he's going to agree with you.
One day, but not today. That's not the day. So we'll start off with Chuck giving us some information from the chatterverse.
Well, as we reported on our last episode, Viacom CBS went all out for the 54th anniversary of Star Trek on September 8th. That included 3.5 hours of interviews with casts of almost every iteration of the franchise. Sorry, Kelvin Timeline. Oh, wait. Have to do it. Maybe next year. But if you missed any of the interviews, don't worry. We have you covered. Go to the show notes for episode 75 over at, do I have to say it?
Yes.
thetopicistrek.com, and you'll find a link.
At least you see it coming that way. You know when it's going to, when you need to ring the bell.
I can't catch myself off guard sometimes.
That's right.
Well, you'll find a link to the full slate of panels back to back to back, and trust us, some of them get quite emotional. Have a box of tissues nearby during the Deep Space Nine panel.
Mm-hmm. I watched, several, well, they were in the morning, they were rebroadcasting shows, and I would pop in and see different stuff out from time to time during the day. It was pretty cool.
It's really sad when Max Grodinchek says, Moogie.
Yeah. That's right. He shouldn't be sticking his fingers in his mouth. Not this time of year.
So we talked about the thing in general, but I believe, Craig, you have some information about something more specific on Star Trek Day.
Yeah, absolutely. So during the panels, a few trailers were dropped. Not on the floor. They were
okay. Good. That was very bad. They might break.
Yeah. Including one for the second half of Star Trek Lower Decks, the premiere season. Among many of the clips is one short view of an old friend. Can you guess? Q.
P. R. S.
I thought it was like, there was a Q dot on here. Yeah. I thought it was a
question. Yes.
Yeah. Lower Decks creator Mike McMahon confirmed our favorite Q continuum scamp will be back, but it will be in a blink and you'll miss it part. Oh, and for some odd reason, the music in the trailer features the theme from Voyager. Perhaps they're playing a tribute to that show's 25th anniversary.
Hmm.
It took me off guard when it started to play. Am I playing the right clip?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I remember going back and listening to it again, thinking, that sounds familiar. And it was, oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I'm seeing the Cerritos, but I'm hearing Voyager. Very strange, very strange. Space is a weird, wild, wacky place.
Especially when the sound doesn't travel in space. How are you hearing the music?
It would take a scientist to explain it, and Dr. Aaron is not here. So we'll move on.
Yeah.
Gravitational
warp bubble, by the
way. Very complicated. Yeah. The other trailer that dropped during Star Trek Day was the new Star Trek Discovery promo. In it, we get more glimpses into the year 3188 and a Federation in chaos due to something called the Burn, which we'll be talking about that in our next episode with some thoughts on that. But we also get to see Discovery crashed onto the surface of a planet. And that can't be good. Ask the people on the Jupiter 2. They know it's not a good thing.
And Enterprise D.
That's right. So they're really not meant for that type of thing, although Voyager was for some reason. So
Yeah, Voyager had struts. This didn't. So it didn't look right.
Well, when you think about the whole bottom of the ship was a strut in that case, I guess. I don't know.
One big strut.
And remember, the new season begins on October 15th, which is directly the week after the end of Lower Decks.
Yeah, just a few weeks from now.
Looking forward to it. Can't wait. Can't wait.
Well, we have a little bit more insight there on that. A little thing we saw in the trailer there, Chuck.
Why didn't you guys tell me about these trailers? I totally missed them.
Really?
Yeah. I have to do it.
Well, if you click on the links in the show notes for episode 75 over at thetopicistrek.com, you can watch the trailers.
Totally self-serving here, but yes.
Hang on. I'll be right back.
Yeah. No. Later.
Okay. Well, unlike me, if you watch the Star Trek Discovery trailer, you'll notice that the show has a new logo. And speaking of new logos, CBS All Access will soon be getting one. And the new name, too. Early in 2021, the streaming service will change its name to Paramount Plus, the big girl size.
Yeah, no.
We hope the Plus does not come with a subscription increase. Ooh, yeah.
No.
We have Disney Plus, we have Hulu Plus, Paramount Plus.
I mean, I made the comment that it was, and other people made it independently, it was the most uninspired possible name change you could have.
Yeah. Yeah. The marketing department just stopped trying.
Yeah.
And by the way, up above in the show notes, you had the Burn Plus.
Yes. That's what its new name is. It's the Burn Plus. Everything's Plus now.
We fixed the show notes.
The topic is Trek Plus.
Yes, exactly. They couldn't have called it Craig Plus as the next story.
And with Discovery now 900 years into the future, which is already in the future, you might be getting a bit confused about what happens in the Trekverse. Well, we'll cheer you up.
Yay!
StarTrek.com has released an updated timeline that takes us from the Big Bang all the way to the Big Burnham. And it's a 3-minute video, even covers the divergence of the Kelvin timeline. So Go check that out. I didn't even watch that.
I think this is the third one that they've done, and they, if I could access the old ones, I'm not sure if they just kind of add new parts to the end, but it's one continuous shot, if you want to call it that. It's it's an infographic type of thing, but as different parts of the timeline appear, you get a clip from the show, and then you get various events that happen right around that point in time, and then it keeps moving forward and forward and forward.
Right.
And you get to the end of Picard, and then there's like this pause, and then whoosh, because you then it's like, oh, now we're going to skip again. Of course, you should really have a big skip between the Big Bang and the first, you know, the second event.
Yeah, that's true.
This is a big event. Oh, by the way, this one was millions of years later.
Very strange. Yeah. Well, if all that diving or warping is making you drink like it is me trying to read these notes here, well, Trek has you covered. If you're looking to drink, let's put it that way. That's because Branded Wine Specialist Wines That Rock, that rocks, is introducing two new Trek-themed offerings: a 2018 Klingon Blood Wine Cabernet Sauvignon, and United Federation of Planets Special Reserve 2019 Sauvignon Blanc. The company partnered with the Trek fan group's Klingon Assault Force. Is it Assault Force or Assault Team? I'm questioning my own notes here.
Let's go with Force.
Okay. If it's Team, my apologies. Please don't come after me. And the Klingon Language Institute to make sure that the blood wine was worthy of a warrior. Now, individual bottles of both of these offerings will sell for $50 each, and they're available now. I know that I bought the offering. I don't think it was through Wines That Rock because it was vodka, but the 10 Forward vodka. Have either of you, I think you bought some of the stuff on the Trek Cruise or something. Have you bought any of the
No, they offer the Kirk bourbon whiskey, and then they had something else, but no, I didn't buy any. Oh
no,
I tried to buy it at the bar. I wanted to at least taste it. But they didn't have it when we were on there.
Yeah, who was going to be interested, right? I mean, you know, it's a Trek Cruise. Well, who's really interested in trying that out?
Well, I went to the bar and said, hey, y'all got some of that? I think it was a whiskey, the one under the Kirk name, and I wanted to try it, and they were like, we don't have any open bottles of that. I'm like, really? Come on.
Let me buy a bottle and break it open.
It's a Klingon Assault Group, by the way.
Okay. I was right. Yay, I was right the first time.
Not a band. They're a group.
Yes. It's a club. It's more of a club.
Yeah. The Klingon right. Woman Haters Club.
Yeah. Now we're going to talk about some competition.
Be the Ferengi.
Hmm.
The new official Star Trek podcast is launched. Not this one. This one is the unofficial podcast. It's entitled Star Trek, The Pod Directive. Huh. Okay. The show is co-hosted by comedian Paul F. Tompkins. That's about as original as
Paramount Plus. The marketing department is really asleep at the wheel here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Co-hosted by comedian Paul F. Tompkins and by the voice of Ensign Mariner, Tawny Newsome. In the premiere episode, they speak with longtime Trek fan Ben Stiller. The trio go deep into Stiller's Star Trek collection, his childhood memories of the show, and the way his fandom pops up in many of his projects, even to this day. Good luck on the podcast, you guys. We've been at it for 45 years of combined experience on this show. Good luck.
That's right.
They got two or one, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. They have yet they have the big name guests, so who wins, right?
A lot more talent.
Right.
Oh, well, but we do indeed wish them luck with that. And yes, Ben is a very big Trek fan. When we went up to the Ticonderoga Star Trek sets, they were talking about the fact that Ben still apparently had been in the area, but I think for some reason or another, they didn't connect and he wasn't able to make it to those sets. And I just have a feeling he would have had the best time ever. So maybe in the intervening time since we were there, he's been up to the sets. I don't know.
don't know. I do. I have heard that he was a big Star Trek fan.
Well, we could do this two ways. Maybe. We could either have him on our show, or we could be on their show to help them launch it.
Hmm. Well, Ben Stiller was on there to help them launch it. But
yeah, I think they're going to go, well, let's see. We're going to weigh that out.
We have stories.
There's three of us. There's one of him. Yeah, somehow Ben still tips the scales in his favor.
That's right.
All right. But let's move on from that happy news to something else.
All right. So it's pretty much a given that if we mention a convention these days, that means it's going to be a virtual one, right, guys?
Absolutely.
Crazy. Witchcraft, you say?
Do what?
Witchcraft, you say?
Yes, right. Well, we've had our share of those. Well, New York Comic Con is no exception. In fact, Star Trek will be kicking off New York's Comic Con's Metaverse virtual event. The Star Trek Universe panel begins on Thursday, October 8th at noon Eastern and 9 a.m. Pacific for all you West Coasters. And we'll have a two back-to-back discussion panels featuring cast and creatives behind Lower Decks and Discovery.
So it's not in person, but nothing's in person these days. So you take what you can get. And that's what we got.
We're ramping up for another virtual conference at work. So I'm doing some studio rearrangement to facilitate that. I got to record in about a week and a half.
Yeah. Well, you know, I wanted to say, going back to the Star Trek day, some of those panels that I did see, and some of them, a couple of them I caught after the fact on YouTube, they were really good. Some of them were really good and gave you some nuggets, you know, about either behind the scene or what's coming up, you know, very little what's coming up, but you get an idea.
Yeah. And, I found the discussion on the Strange New Worlds one interesting because I mean, basically at this point, the actors are mostly speculating on what's going to be happening. I'm not sure if they've
probably got a general idea, maybe some things. Yeah,
cause I know that they've been working on the scripts, in the writer's room, but I don't know whether or not the cast has actually seen the scripts. And I'm wondering, I just picture the writers watching the panel going, oh yeah, that's a good idea. We need to, we got time to rewrite this. Okay. Let's do that. Yeah. I like their idea better.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a feeling that they have some idea of the big beats that they're going to be exploring over the next however long they plan ahead. But so, yeah, they didn't really give out anything. There was something they were joking about. Oh, it was Star Trek New Worlds was the longest pilot to order. Oh, yes.
Yeah. 50, so
54 years or whatever.
Right. 54 years between the pilot and getting the green light to make your show. Yeah. That's an Eric's if I ever heard one, but
great. Just in time for my retirement.
Well, a while ago, we announced that Star Trek was up for some 2020 Emmys. They were not for 20 and 20 Emmys, for 2020 Emmy. Well, you know what I mean. Anyway, we promised to let you know how things turned out. And although our favorite franchise lost out on most of the awards it was up for, it did walk away with the 2020 Creative Arts Emmy for, and I'm going to say this in one breath, Outstanding Prosthetic Makeup for a Series, Limited Series, Movie, or Special for the Star Trek Picard episode, Absolute Candor. Congratulations to the Trek team and all the other nominees and winners. Now, I looked up because, you know, sometimes I can't remember the names of the episodes. I can't remember my own name sometimes, so that's not surprising. It was not the episode I thought it was going to be. It's the one where Picard goes to the refugee planet. So I wouldn't consider it the most heavy makeup episode ever.
I'll tell you what I was impressed with on Picard is anytime they showed any of the aliens were great, but Soji's boyfriend at the beginning, because they had that close up and he had the funky eyes and stuff and he had the hair. I was like, they did a good job because it looked natural. And he got up from the couch and was talking with him. I was like, it just looked like you'd be hanging out with this guy or anywhere. So, yeah, I think they did a great job with the makeup.
Right. So, one in the win column for Star Trek this year. Yay!
Yay.
All right, but now there, you have the most important story of the night, Craig.
Oh, I do. Oh,
oh, this is absolutely.
Let me go put on my Tux t-shirt.
Okay.
And in news you can't use, news we take note of a page on the Smithsonian Institute site that features a Star Trek item, number, not,
no, not the number. I got to work on the punctuation for you.
Here we go again.
Item, no, not the Enterprise model. We're talking about the most iconic of Trek items, the Star Trek, the motion picture, lunchbox, Splendor in the photo and description of item number 2001.3099.08.
That sounds like the
this
captain's
one
log.
This came up in my Star Trek feed and I went, what?
Yeah. Not the Spock with the police siren hat?
No, no. They may have one of those as well, but they have, and I don't know if I've ever actually seen this lunch, but not like by the time the motion picture came out, I was looking for a lunchbox.
Right.
But I don't recall seeing this item before. And
you need to buy a lunchbox for work, and this is the one you come back from Walmart with.
That's right. And it's in pretty good shape because apparently whoever had it never used it for anything because it's not dented. There's no, you know, the telltale signs that somebody actually used it as a lunchbox.
Never removed the package.
I see just a little bit of paint chipping on the edge, but it looks like it was slightly used, but not much.
Yeah.
I never had any Star Trek lunchbox. I had I don't think it was Scooby-Doo. I don't even remember. I remember having some lunchboxes, but I don't remember what they.
I had a Beanie and Cecil lunchbox.
Never had a lunchbox because we always lived too close. We could always walk home. And on those rare occasions when my mom made me eat at school, it was a brown paper bag. I wasn't eating the brown paper bag. My lunch was in the brown paper bag.
I was going to say, because that's full of fiber. That's great, but still.
Unbleached. For that natural.
You're recycling. Good for you.
More ways than one.
Good on you.
Let's not go down that path right now, shall we?
Hey, I will tell you this. Any of those lunch boxes like this, those thermos ones, you can open it up, and I can distinctly tell you the smell. I can smell it right now just thinking about it.
That peanut butter and jelly smell?
Or whatever it was, the stainless steel, or you know what I'm talking about. Just that metal smell.
With the lead lining.
Yeah. It's like, good stuff.
I think I'd rather sniff the mimeographs, buddy.
Yeah. I need to get myself checked out.
And there's a glimpse into Craig's world, ladies and gentlemen. All right, now. And in Vulcan, Alberta, Canada news.
Oh, yeah.
Because nobody asked.
We recently told you about the new Star Trek-themed street lamps.
Yes.
Being installed along Center Street. Well, the street itself is now getting some love due to a repaving project. So as you roll down Center Street in Vulcan, Alberta, Canada, it'll give you just a nice, even, steady view as you look up and see the streetlights and then realize, I shouldn't be looking up while I'm driving. I really should be looking at the road.
Right.
So stop, pull your car over, look up at the street lamps, and then enjoy the road after that. But in other news, the town of Vulcan's library board has been selected as one of four 2019-2020 Minister's Award for Excellence in Public Library Services for its Reading to Build Community program. So good job, Vulcan, Alberta, Canada.
Was LeVar Burton there because it had to do with reading?
There's a rainbow in the town. I don't know if did that mean something? I'm not sure. What does that double rainbow mean? He's there twice? I don't know.
What does it mean?
I don't know. I just got here. Now, that's a lot of stories that we covered this time around, but we have more. We have an additional 42 stories, everything from information on what crew would have inhabited that Noah Hawley Trek movie, a revelation about Gene Roddenberry by Patrick Stewart, analysis of Easter eggs in Lower Decks, and much, much more. So if you go over to the show notes for episode 75 over at thetopicistrek.com, you can check out all these stories and keep yourself busy with reading about Trek until the next time we put out an episode. With that said, it's time to come back from subspace chatter, so we say goodbye, Charlie.
I want
to
stay.
Bye-bye.
By the way, we should get the person that runs the Vulcan Library on for an interview.
We should talk about what's happening there.
Do you have, do you have this book? No, do you have this book?
Do you have, no, you have to say, do you have this book?
That's right.
And now, as we head out on our main mission to some appropriate sound effect. Sure, why not? We're talking about
the budget out.
Yeah, well, the next two episodes in the premiere season of Star Trek Lower Decks, and we're going to begin with Terminal Provocations. And that was first released on September 10th, 2020. Like, I say that like that means something. A couple of fun facts in here, both involve voice actors. The Drukmani captain was voiced by J.G. Hertzler, who, of course, played Martok.
Yeah.
On Star Trek Deep Space Nine, as well as other characters in the Star Trek verse. And Jack McBrayer, who was Kenneth, the perennial page on 30 Rock, voiced Badgy.
Yeah. Oh, as soon as I heard his voice, I was like, I knew who that was.
No, I missed that one. And I did not recognize J.G. I'm going to have to go back and watch that now. That's interesting.
Hertzler.
Yeah.
I recognize his voice too, but it took me a minute to place it. Because I was like, wait, it sounds familiar. You know.
So a lot of things happened in this episode. Lots of strange things happened. We have the creation of an artificial intelligence. We have a suspense about who knocked out this character. We have all sorts of things going on. What did you guys think of the episode overall of Terminal Provocations?
It was a bit all over the place, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like we had two separate stories that intersected at various points.
Yeah, as did the latest episode as well, had multiple storylines going, which I thought was okay because, you know, the hour-long TNGs would do that as well. There was a subplot and there was a primary plot. I'm trying to remember if there were any moments that really stuck out and made me laugh. I apologize. I did not make notes on this one as I normally would.
Well, the very first thing that I thought was obvious, although when I mentioned it to my wife Bonnie, she went, "Oh, really?" is who Badgy is based on.
A Clippy. Of course.
Badgy the tutor was clearly Clippy.
Right.
Yeah.
Comes in even to the point where when he's loading a program, there's a progress bar that seems to go really slow.
And
the
stuck.
Second time it just up and freezes.
I loved Badgy. I mean, it was a little goofy, you know, but I thought it was hilarious.
Well, when he dies, it was a callback to Futurama doing their parody of Star Trek, which I thought was doubly referenced, you know, when you go, Badgy, instead of, well, she.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right. I didn't think
that's
about
what
that.
I picked up on. I thought, wow, now there's an obscure reference that even some of the hardcore Trekkies may not get.
You know what's funny is we have a listener on Technorama, and his name is Wetchy, and I kept yelling that out. Yeah. So I should have caught that. Wetchy. But I thought Badgy, like I said, was a little goofy, but then as soon as I saw him pop up, I went, I know exactly what this is.
They had a number of references. I'm trying to remember where it was, but they were making the holodeck references, and they mentioned Moriarty. And they mentioned all these Star Trek holodeck issues and characters and problems, like just in this 5-second stream is like bam, 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 bam. So, I mean, once again, they're sparing no expense on the references, which is always fun. No.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Now, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, obviously the holodeck thing is turning into a Star Trek trope where
I think it's well established.
Although I like it. I like those stories. I think they're kind of interesting, especially with the Moriarty thing. Cause you know, between the, how many episodes was he in?
He was in two. Cause he kind of gets,
the second one was kind of mind bending. Cause you go, oh, they're actually, everybody was in the holodeck when he was trying to get out of the, that kind of thing. I thought that was well done, but I like the holodeck malfunction stories. And I think this one worked out pretty well too. Although Badgie went on a murder.
Yeah, it was interesting. I feel like in this episode in particular, the series has started to shift slightly. I mean, we'll talk about the next episode where I think it's continuing that, where I look at it as if they're trying to find their footing. And I think they're zeroing in on something now where, okay, it's a comedy, but we got to have stakes. We got to have, there's got to be really something at risk here. And so they're more than ever, I think they're trying to walk that line between a comedy and basically having your artificial intelligence that you created try to kill you and stab you and, have blood coming out of your nose and, going the other direction. And I think this is the first episode we can clearly say, well, remember back when Mike McMahon was talking about, and I know there's going to be this upcoming series of Nickelodeon is going to be kid friendly. That is not what Lower Decks is. Lower Decks is not the series that's going to be for the kids to be watching all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wasn't real clear where the whole Fletcher thing was a little overdone.
And McMahon talked about that. He basically said he was kind of a Barclay character. Barclay was just a real jerk.
He made Barclay look competent.
Right. Well, they basically, that's why they had Fletcher hook himself up to try to make himself smarter, the same way that Barclay did.
They kept talking to Fletcher. I was like, where the hell has this guy been the last 6 episodes? Just show up.
He came over from Delta Shift or something.
I was expecting him to be like an alien, or some.
We did get to see some Delta Shift people, and that didn't go so well, did it?
No. Well, thanks to, it was a contentious relationship to begin with. Fletcher didn't help things any by merely threatening to beat them up.
Yeah. Yeah, that was funny. Fletcher was a loose cannon there for a little bit. It's like, hey, whoa, chill out. But yeah, it was just, I just thought it was funny. Like they just kind of dropped him in the episode. It's like, where was he in the last or the previous, 5 episodes? Anyway.
You're always going to have that, right? You're always going to have those people that just,
disposable
it
characters.
Could be that he just arrived. There's no reason to indicate that he wasn't a new arrival in the past, couple of weeks or so on the ship.
Yeah. Then they arranged to get him a promotion and off the ship.
That's right.
And then he really screwed up. Although
they have to be careful with that because we've had a couple times now we've, deal with promotions and something happens because you get promoted. And we'll talk about that more in the next episode as well.
Yeah.
Because that's they're starting to lean on that. And I understand that because they are kind of low rung on the totem pole, that's an option to do something, you advancing up the chain, but don't go to that well too many times.
Yeah.
They also mentioned Starbase 80 and everybody kind of gasped. We've never heard that before.
Oh, like the Janeway maneuver?
Is Starbase 80 Detroit? Sorry, that was a Bruce Lee call.
Detroit?
No, that was actually.
Oh, no, you don't want to go there.
Kentucky Fried Cincinnati. Movie.
Detroit. You can send your emails to Mr. Chuck. No,
that was from Kentucky Fried Movie. Take him to Detroit. Sorry, what was? Do we have any idea what's up with Starbase 80?
No, I don't know whether that's going to become a running gag or not. I don't think we've made reference to it before, but It could be one of the things just says to show up and then eventually maybe they have to go to Starbase 80.
I'm thinking so. That might be a forward call.
Well, Memory Beta has some information on it.
Go on.
It says, Starbase 80 was a Starfleet base facility in operation in the mid-24th century, located somewhere in the galaxy's Alpha or Beta quadrant. I guess they're not sure.
They're basing this all off of this.
It's in the Alpha or Beta quadrant. That's half the galaxy you just generalized.
Well, I know.
Well, carry on.
In the year 2365, while Guinan was waiting at the starbase for the Federation starship USS Enterprise D to pick her up, she was told a story by Jake Stutzman. The very same story was told to her by Geordi LaForge, where he claimed credit for Stutzman's actions. Starbase has an unpopular reputation as an assignment for Starport personnel. I think that's where they were talking about. Mariner was talking about that. So didn't really talk much about it. Huh. Okay. Well,
I did not realize that was Starbase 80. So, cause I believe I clicked through to try to find information on Memory Alpha, and it pretty much just referenced the episode of Lower Decks that we're talking about. So, that's interesting.
Memory Beta.
Well, Memory Beta is mostly about the,
novels. And
stuff. Yeah. Yeah. So that's probably why. Hmm. And then we have Captain Freeman, who is going so far out of her way to not do anything provocative with our friends out there, the salvagers. Speaking of salvage, we get another callback to the animated series in this episode. I'm sure you guys caught it, that the robotic freighters were the exact same ones that were in the More Tribbles, More Troubles episode of the animated series.
I did not
series.
Catch that. Nice catch. I was more entertained by them throwing things at the Cerritos. Right.
As Shax wants to fire at the ship, you know, Freeman is saying, no, don't. And they're hurling things at the Cerritos, basically just pushing them against the hull.
It was eating up the shields, or I guess...
The shields were messed up because of the isolinear pod that became sentient.
Thanks, right. Fletcher.
But of course, that worked out in the end, kind of, because it went after the ship. So I don't know.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
We forgot our spoiler alert.
What's that, Chuck?
We forgot our spoiler alert. You're a little late, but
spoiler alert.
There.
So good job.
I liked how Captain Freeman walked into the conference room, and she basically got everybody to agree except for one guy. Everybody was like, "Okay, yeah, that works for me." They all walked out. You know, in the negotiations.
Wasn't that the previous week?
"You're gonna do this. You're gonna do this. You're gonna do this." "Oh, yeah, it kind of works. Okay, bye. I'm out."
Wasn't that the previous week?
Yeah, that was not this episode.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I'm 2 weeks behind.
I thought you were going for a point about what her command style is like.
Well, yeah, she's just working too much. Anyway, you know what? Right. Apparently I am too.
Yes, exactly.
We can fix this in post.
Well, why don't we help you out by moving on to an episode that's more recent in your mind, since we just watched it today.
Yeah. Three times.
Which is Much Ado About Boimler, which first aired on today. I think first released today, that's the way I phrase it, because it didn't really 17. Air, did it? Now, on this one, a bunch of plot points in this one here. I'm going to read off a couple of them because there's a lot going on in this episode as well. First of all, we have Tendi, who's creating a dog out of inert carbon.
That's
not enough.
You named the dog the dog.
Yeah. We have Rutherford trying to make the transporters go slightly faster and ends up making Boimler not quite phase back in from his transporting.
I think you should have put in there slightly not phased back.
Yeah.
got rid of the noise. That was better, right? Yeah, that was the most annoying.
Yeah, that noise. If you've never heard a transporter just continuously going, it is extremely excruciating to listen to.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I felt for the crew because I'm like, please find some way to turn that noise off.
I like how he showed up on the bridge for like 2 seconds. Get out. Get out. Yeah.
Okay. It wasn't even that pleasant.
Yeah.
And then we naturally have Captain Freeman and Commander Ransom and Lieutenant Chex are on a very important away mission because of their expertise in the germination of the roulotte seeds.
I love that. They might plant some seeds. Ooh, that's very...
Yeah.
That was,
we better let you go because you might plant some seeds.
That was a very... I liked that as a subplot.
And that led to the arrival of Captain Amina Ramsey of the USS Oakland in temporary command. I don't think we saw the Oakland in the episode. Mm-mm. I'm assuming because it's Oakland, it's like another California class ship, but I don't know that. And then turns out that Ramsey is a friend from the Academy days. Oh, that's a Star Trek trope right there. Oh, from my days in the Academy. And she makes Mariner her second in command. But for some reason, Mariner keeps messing things up. And I feel like we're starting to know Mariner well enough to know why she's screwing up before Captain Ramsey realizes it.
Yeah.
But while all that wackiness is going on, Boimler and the dog, along with Tendi, are taken aboard a transport, the Osler, which they are told is going to take them to the farm. Mm-hmm. Now, how many times have you heard about the dog?
Taking the dog to the farm or the cat to the farm.
Going to go upstate to the farm and be able to run free.
You know,
and that's kids.
I keep thinking of that movie, Funny Farm with Chevy Chase, and he had the dog and he lets the dog loose and the dog just runs for the whole movie. Every once in a while you see it running across the field in the background.
Fortunately, this one had a much happier ending than most dogs have. We also find that when the USS Rubidoux is late for a rendezvous, Captain Ramsey suspects that Captain Dayton, because there's always Dayton someplace, has messed up. But we find out otherwise because there is a familiar alien. And it has to do with the Rubidoux. I did not see that one coming. I figured there'd be an alien, but to have the return of the entity.
The jellyfish from Farpoint.
was a bit of a surprise. Because,
oh, boy.
I mean, the one that was at Farpoint was kind of forced to be there.
Right.
I don't know what the story is. Why was this entity on the starship?
They didn't really give that information, but they did say it was consuming the energy, so they shut down their energy so that it would stop attacking, morphing, evolving, escaping.
Don't turn on the anti-gravity.
Maybe that.
So I'm wondering was it maybe a baby somehow that got caught in the ship and was like?
Well, didn't they say that the ship was already in it?
Well, they said that
it was already in the ship.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm not sure what how that whole thing came about, but there it was. And as soon as we saw those tentacles start to poke out, I think, oh, I know what that is. Yet they didn't seem to know. They referred to it as an unidentified entity, even at the end of the episode. So something happened to those records.
They bought the ship from the bandy.
Ah, I see.
Okay,
I really liked this episode. I thought that, like I said, with this and the last episode really were kind of hitting a different stride with the series. And this one had, we had the comic relief in many places, and yet we have the main story, which is rather, significant, especially as you get towards the climax of it, where they're trying to get the crew off of the ship before basically the ship is gone. So I thought it was a good mix this time out. I mean, the most ridiculous part was the seeds. on the planet. I mean, just the three of them, and you have
they're Ransom. On the black.
Ransom is in the background just lifting weights, you know.
Yeah, he's got a dumbbell. But they're all in the
ninja outfits.
Yeah, the Starfleet ninja outfits.
With the references, if you're listening close when they're anticipating this substitute captain, Mariner is rattling off this sequence, and in there is, you know, we're going to get this Jellicoe type captain. Like, did she just say Jellicoe?
Yeah.
It goes by so fast. I went to turn on the captions from there on out, but unfortunately the CBS app on my TV, 75-inch TV, and it's about a 0.8 font closed caption in white, and most of the floors are white. I'm like, what is the point of that? I'm sitting 12 inches away from this 75-inch TV, and I can still barely read it. So that's bad on you, CBS. Bad on you.
Fix that app. We also get some insight as to why Mariner, at least she's saying why she doesn't want to rank up, is that she doesn't want to at the moment.
She kind of was wishy-washy at the end. She says, maybe I will be a captain, or maybe I won't. I'm just going to try and find myself. There wasn't any real conclusion to what she wants to do or doesn't want to do in this case. What we did get is, I'm just going to play it. I really wanted him to do that. Wanted him to do that.
I know, right?
Hopefully he'll make a return appearance at some point or another.
We have an Andosian.
We're speaking about a long-lost relative of Eric's.
Although they didn't give him a name.
No, they didn't.
Clearly, three legs and three arms, and he was wearing his COVID mask, too. Good of him to, go into a new environment wearing a mask.
Just for a little bit. He took it off promptly.
Yeah, once they get back on the ship, all bets are off.
Yeah. Like I got angry and started busting the table, and
that's just the way I get angry. Yeah, it's. I don't know. Eric seemed to be very, very level headed and very straightforward.
He's playing his guitar, man. He was chilled.
Yeah, he knows how it goes.
They did give this character a completely different voice, though. I mean, when you think of Lieutenant Eric's was very stilted, and this guy was, somewhat evil.
The universal translator is working much better now.
Ah, and he had that evil laugh. Sorry, that's just the way I laugh.
That's just the way I laugh. They're all like, "What?"
The freaks. I'm hoping we see more of the Edosians because, I'm sure the animators love. Oh, great! Now we have to deal with three arms and three legs. That's just wonderful.
Yeah, but it's only three fingers.
I'm watching when it's like grabbing the rifle. Where are those three arms
going?
That was
fascinating. Or walking down the hall. It's like they had some new stuff to contend with.
I bet it was much easier to deal with it here than what would be on like Star Trek Discovery.
Oh yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Hey, Doug Jones, you're going to have a third arm next season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What? Oh.
It's part of the evolution of the Kelpians.
It's fine. You'll find.
Yeah, you'll be all right.
You can walk it off with your three legs. Oh, did I mention the three legs? Never mind.
Hey, the freaks were kind of freaky.
Some of the freaks were familiar freaks, especially
the big slug.
In the beginning, somebody apparently messing with Warp 10 again. Because there was another giant salamander.
That's right.
I love it when at the end he's getting a massage. Oh.
Yeah, it looks like he's enjoying it, didn't he?
That was one of Paris.
And we had several Pike chairs, and apparently they still can just only beep. Just one blink for yes, twice for no.
Well, you can put a very large Hawaiian shirt on them.
You can. That's good to know.
Yeah, like a... one of them had a bikini and the other two had Orion shirts.
On the big black chairs. That's the best part.
Yeah. On the black wheelchair.
My favorite was the guy who looked like all of the exploded moons in Star Trek. His head, and he was walking around, his head was three quarters there, and then the parts that were broken off were just
suspending
in like a dispersal pattern above his head.
Yeah, I thought that was good too.
I was like, I was wondering myself, how does that actually work?
Again, it would take a scientist to explain, and we gravity. Don't have one. So
he has a very dense head. Gravity. Just say gravity.
Yeah. But no. All right. Well, I thought this was a pretty good episode. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. I thought there were stakes involved with it, and we got very dramatic. And I think, Craig, you were the one who was mentioning that you were stopping and listening to the music on this one in particular.
Yeah, that was something I wanted to mention. I was listening. Usually I've watched the episode on the computer with my speakers, or maybe sometimes a couple mornings I watched it on my phone, but I had headphones on this time, and I was listening to it today as I was watching it. And man, the music, they really nailed it. I would put this Star Trek, this music from this episode on any Star Trek series. It was fantastic. And I even backed it up a couple times because I was trying to listen through, you know, behind the voices and just enjoying it. It was good stuff. So just throwing that out there, because I think that can get a little lost, because, you know, you got all this fast and sometimes humorous dialogue going by. You may not catch that, but the music is really good on this show.
Was it better than our music?
Yeah, I don't know. For some reason, I as well, especially when we got to that last part of the last act, when they were trying to get a bit off the ship, and it plays up really loud at that point. I was noticing how just darn intense that music was, and you know how good that music was.
Yeah, and even the intro music on the beginning of the show, I like it a lot. I like it better than Enterprise.
Do you like it better than this?
No, not our show. I meant, yeah, no, that music rocks.
That's right. That's its own level up there. All right, but now it is time to rate the episodes.
We'll go back to our first
one here, which was Terminal Provocations. And that is the one where we have, we'll call the Barclay character, Fletcher, is in this episode.
Where Captain Freeman negotiates everything. That's the previous episode.
That's the previous episode. So I'm trying to recount this for your benefit.
Oh,
and the Drakians are hurling, or well, they're not hurling, they're pushing all the debris at the Cerritos. So I will start with Chuck on this one.
I'm going to go with about just debating between 6.5 and 7. I'll go with a 7. I thought it was good.
Okay.
Didn't think it was terrific. You know, I thought the thing with Fletcher kind of dragged on a little bit too much.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. I'll go next. I am going to give this a 7.5. I do agree that Fletcher had some weirdness going on, and it would have been better if his character was indeed introduced a little bit earlier. So you kind of get a feel for him, and then he's kind of gets all thrown off by this one thing and goes off the deep end. But I really thought that all the pieces were coming together in a good way in this episode, that you were starting to get that feel of a ship on a semi-important mission, like a secondary mission of a starship, and the bridge crew doing their thing, and the second of the lower deck people doing their thing. And I thought it really worked out well together. All right. And we'll go next to Craig.
I will also give it a 7.5. I think that it was a solid episode. I do agree that the Fletcher thing didn't land for me. And I'll tell you, it's all because they talked to him like they've been interacting with him for the whole season, and he's just there. And then all of a sudden he's causing problems. I know they all had history, but I got this feeling they were trying to make him fit in, like they've been interacting with him on this ship for quite a while. But I don't know. And then it kind of drug on. So that part didn't really work for me. But the rest of it I thought was solid. And I'll take it. I gave it a 7.5.
So I'm wondering if we would hear this voice going, I see you're trying to introduce a new character. Would you like help with that? Anyway.
No.
That was the show's saving grace, was Badgie.
Badgie.
Oh, yeah.
Badgie, we hardly knew ye.
And Jack McBayer playing Badgie was perfect.
All right. And then we move on to Much Ado About Boimler, the most recent episode where we have the dog. We have seeds. Name. We have the a fog. We have
a transporter accident. The
entity transporter Freaks. Malfunctions. We have a relative of Eric. You name it. This episode has got it. I'm going to go in the reverse order. So I'm going to start with Craig on this one. Yeah. Thank you, Eric's.
Yeah. Now this episode, I'm going to give it an 8 because I thought it built even more. It was even better than the last one. The dog thing I thought was great. Tindy, you realize that Tindy didn't have a good understanding of how dogs were supposed to be.
Right.
Was supposed to work.
Get to the end. He licked my face. That's gross.
It's gross. Yeah. That was pretty good. I liked the freaks. Even the ones in the wheelchair, the whole thing. I think it was great. So this episode, I think was super solid.
Okay. And I will go next and I'm going to give it, I'm doing the one higher as well. I'm going to go to an 8.5 on this one.
Oh,
I think this was the first episode that I've watched where I said, this was pretty solid from beginning to end, that they had the comedy beats down. The characters were kind of shorthanded. You kind of knew who they were at this point. And when they were acting not the way they were supposed to be acting, you know, as I said, when we were talking about it, you even kind of had an idea of why they were doing what they were doing. And it felt like this episode, everything was really clicking. So 8.5 for me. And I will go back to Chuck.
I'm going with an 8.5 as well. I thought there was a lot of stuff happening, but it was happening. It was working well. Like you said, the comedy beats were on, characters. It was a lot more fun. I didn't find myself getting annoyed. It seems like most other episodes, there's certain points where I'm going, all right, this is just getting tiresome or annoying. This one didn't have that element. At least it didn't smack me in the face.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And of course, we're always interested what opinion you have, what ratings you would give it on a scale of 1 to 10. So you can tweet us at The Topic is Trek or leave a note on the Facebook page and let us know what you rate these episodes. All right. With that, we're coming back from our main mission with an appropriate sound effect.
Black alert. Black alert.
We're going to warp speed, aren't we?
Warp 10. That's not going to be a problem, is it?
Do we have any spores?
I mean, I like the farm. The farm is nice. So
I want to be the half old, half young guy.
There you go.
Yeah, one short leg, one long leg. that was funny looking. Yeah. That was a great character.
And we are going to do our quick warp speed roundtable. And this time around, if we see Klingons in season 3 of Discovery, and I don't believe we have seen any in any of the promos, but if we do, which iteration do you think would make the most sense? Now I'm trying to figure out what to call them. So for argument's sake, I'm going to call a Worf type Klingon, a Vok type Klingon, or something new. As a matter of fact, I'm even going to say, let's put TOS Klingons into the mix as well. All right. So you've got 4 options of Klingons in there. So what type do you think would make the most sense to show if we do indeed see Klingons in season 3?
You did put something new. Okay.
Right. Something new is the other. So we've got
three arms and 3 legs.
Yeah. We've got
better to do battle.
We've got a Worf. Well, basically your motion picture on Klingon.
The turtle head.
Which is your Discovery type of Klingon, mm-hmm. your TOS Klingons, which is the makeup and the goatees, or something completely new, or something new. Completely new doesn't even have to be completely new. I'll start off, and I'm going to say I'd like to see something new, something that is an evolution of the Klingons that you can point at and go, this is how it evolved, because I think that would help in a way, all the iterations of Klingons make a bit more sense. Now, I know we've had the Enterprise episode, which explains
there was some the sort humanoid of looking. Yeah, there was a change. What was it? It was a medical condition of some sort,
right,
wasn't it?
Right. So you have that, but I still would like to see this be something where that race, through its evolution, tends to indeed morph. And after 900 years, you have Klingons, but they're not going to look like either of those more sophisticated makeup Klingons that we've seen. So I would say something new, not completely new, but an iteration new. All right, I will go next to Craig for this one.
I'm going to say I want to see something new, but I'll be honest with you. Worf, those kind of Klingons were pretty cool. The ones in Discovery, I think they're okay, but there was so much makeup and stuff. They weren't very dynamic and able to move, or they had that marble mouth kind of talk, and they didn't land as well with me as I like, of course, TNG or even the TOS Klingons.
Craig, you're sounding kind of racist calling them marble mouth.
You listen, you heard them. It's not racist. But they kind of, Yeah, anyway. So I loved the TOS ones because I know that they were constrained by the time and maybe some of the money and stuff. However, I liked that they were kind of almost opposite from humans, you know what I'm saying? They were kind of just different from humans. Mm-hmm. Opposite, I guess is the best word. Anyway, I would like to see some kind of mix between the TNG and the TOS Klingons.
Okay. All right. Fair
Maybe
enough.
Maybe that virus was kicking back in and they got rid of the forehead again.
And it would certainly help with the makeup budget, but there goes your next Emmy nomination.
Yeah, that's right.
And you won that one. So keep up the makeup. All right. And we will go to Chuck.
I'm going to try and science my way out of this.
Ooh, science.
Okay. There was some sort of virus or other medical condition that caused them to go from TOS to the TNG. And then TNG, from the time of TNG, but Discovery was in the past. So they were bumpier. Right, so. But when we saw the episode of TNG that we all want to forget, where everybody de-evolves, Worf was pretty exoskeleton on that. So that would suggest he was more like the Discovery Klingons. So we have a rift in the timeline of how the Klingons actually quote unquote evolved. Are they getting bonier or are they getting less bony? It appears.
I'm going to leave that one for, there's a joke in there, but so go ahead.
And that was a span of what, a couple hundred years. And now you're going 900 years into the future. So whatever we decide that they did in a couple hundred years, I'm going to extrapolate and say that's what they're going to be in the future, which would appear to be less bony. They're getting smoother. My inner gut says, do we really need another Klingon type to identify with, or can we just leave the Discovery Klingons as the Discovery Klingons in the future?
Well, that is one of the options.
Is that race so susceptible to evolution that they keep changing? That's a short time to do a lot of evolution. That is, in fact, evolution and not some sort
of
crazy...
Well, it's a longer time than they had, other places in the Star Trek timeline.
Yeah. Environmental mutation might be more of a, it's like, hey, stop drinking the lead wine. Stop putting lead in your blood wine or something.
Unleaded
mercury.
Blood wine, please, good sir.
They got mercury in their prune juice or something.
Right.
So my gut tells me I'm fine identifying a series Klingon with that series. So if we go into the future, the humans are going to look like humans. The Romulans are going to look like Romulans. Let the Klingons from Discovery look like the Klingons from Discovery in the future.
Okay.
I didn't science my way out of anything there.
No, not really. And it's interesting to your point, Craig, on that one. I remember Michael Westmore, I think it was on the Trek crew, was talking about the when they were doing the Klingons for Discovery, he said no one contacted them. And he said, they're going to have to figure out all the same, you know, the same problems we had. And you'll notice that in season two, the Klingon makeup was not the same as it was in season one.
Right.
Yeah. Well, they had hair and.
Well, Laurel also was easier for her to talk, you know, I think. So I think they had adapted that makeup. So if you wouldn't notice it just offhand, but if you were to go back and compare the looks of them, they were slightly different. So look, she mutated from season one to season two.
Yeah.
They just, their DNA is really not that well. It's tightly wound, shall we say, apparently. Well,
and you know, as a kid, when, in watching TOS, when you saw the Klingons and the way they looked and then you saw, of course, Starfleet or some of Starfleet, it was kind of analogous to Russians in the US.
Yeah.
You know, cause they were opposite in that kind of thing where, you know, the Klingons were tougher battle, you know, warrior type. And then Starfleet was more peaceful. So they had that dynamic going on and they still do, I guess, with all the Klingons, but it's just the, I don't know, the look, kind of sold out to me.
It's funny you mentioned the Russians, because as a child, I always equated the Klingons to more of the Chinese. I don't know why.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Maybe it was the eyebrows.
I always viewed them as Russia
as
well. So that's interesting.
So you're weird, Chuck.
Oh. No, it's just, I mean.
Just kidding.
They're all communists, or at least they were.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that is interesting. All right. Now, again, we're asking your opinion out there. If you think you have a particular reason or you just want to say which way you think things would go, again, if we see Klingons in season three of Discovery, and I know someone out there is probably going, I blew up frame 367 from the trailer, and I can clearly see a Klingon back there, and it looks exactly like, but I don't know that.
It looks like the dog.
Yeah, it looks like the dog. The dog. No, that's just a cube rolling around the corridors over there.
By the way, that was funny. Clunk, clunk, clunk.
And I love Boimler's reaction to it. So anyway.
or Mariner, wake me up when there's something I should pay attention to.
Let us know what your opinion is of that, or of the dog, whichever the thing with the dog flying off at the end of the episode.
We need to use that in our show somewhere. We need to use that in our show somewhere. Wake me up when there's something I should pay attention to.
Yeah, right.
But in the meantime, it's time to refill the dilithium chamber and try to warp on out of here. We got to make sure that there's no giant slugs or anything sucking on the nacelles or anything. Okay, but you can find me, Clinton, at Comedy Forecast, all one word, with the number 4.com, where I do a comedy podcast, unlike this, which is a tragedy podcast, I'm sure you think. But anyway, who speaks for you guys this week?
Well, you got a real Janus thing going on with the smiley on one face and the sad face on the other. This is, what? You can find us at, don't you know the symbol of the theater?
Yes.
I know what you're talking about. Okay. I'm just like, where'd that come from? Okay.
He said comedy and tragedy.
Huh? Oh.
Oh, wow. They're two sides of a coin.
Well,
maybe I should close this webpage and pay attention.
No, don't bother. It's all right.
You try to inject a little culture into this show and see what happens.
As little culture as possible, thank you.
That's right.
You can find us.
Look, culture. We said much to do about Boimler. I think we're covered. We got a Shakespeare reference. We're done.
It's about as good as it's going to get. You can find us by searching for Technorama Podcast on the internet or going to chuckchat.com/Technorama, where you can find our podcast, which is offbeat news. Sometimes there's real news in there about science and space and whatnot, but we've also got the 16-year-old boy who created smart glasses was in this last episode, which I thought was very impressive, along with some really offbeat things. Occasionally, you'll find somebody who converts their living room into the bridge of the Enterprise, and their spouse leaves them. Surprise, surprise.
because they're more of a Star Wars fan.
Chuckchat.com/Technorama or search for Technorama podcast on your favorite search engine.
All right. Excellent. So next time around, we'll be talking about the next two episodes of Star Trek Lower Decks, which is going to bring us very close to the end of season one of Lower Decks.
How many other 10?
That just kind of blew past really quickly,
yeah,
didn't it?
I think it's 10 of them. Yeah. 10?
So we're going to be watching 8 and 9 next time?
Yeah. Okay. And so we're coming right up on Discovery at this point. Wow. Well,
we're going to review episode 10 of Lower Decks and episode 1 of Discovery.
Now, if you mix those two up, that's going to be a big issue, you know?
Yeah. Bormler was hanging out with Burnham.
So when Mariner arrives in 3188, no.
Yeah, right.
And then Cyrano Jones comes back because we had a gap week and had to stick in an animated series in there.
Oh,
no.
Let's hit the theme.
Already?
Okay. All right. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic Is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and to myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic Is Trek, don't put on the red shirt.
Or
I see you're trying to do a catchphrase. Would you like help with that?
Don't get in Rutherford's transporter.
Shut up, Badgie.